On today's episode, we're going to be talking about from immigrant to top executive in Silicon Valley.
It's Mauricio Mejia live. Entertainment guru, Silicon Valley entrepreneur, author, and speaker. It's Mauricio Mejia live.
Now, all right, I want to welcome everyone to Mauricio Mejia live. And today we got an interesting conversation that we're going to be having. Special guest, we're going to be talking about what the life of an immigrant to the United States, not only to the United States, but to Silicon Valley, what the journey looks like. And then to have no formal education and then become a top vice president of HP. And with that said, I want to welcome my guest, Carlos Queseda.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Welcome. I hear this is a big day for you as well. It's almost like a dream come true.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
Cliche as it sounds, though, right? As much as it sounds, it is truly a dream come true to take things and manifest and make them reality.
So, absolutely. Full circle moment for me right
welcome
now.
To the show. Welcome to the show, man. I'm so excited to have you. I'm excited to share the stories and things that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. Looking forward to it.
Good. So to kick it off, and it sounds funny, but it's the way we got to dig deep and we got to go to the roots.
Let's do it.
Right? Anything. We got to dive deep and we got to start from where it all started, man. So when I was a kid, that's where we got to go. So you're not from here, from the United States. Born in Mexico.
Yep.
And share the story with us, man, and let's dive into it because that's what we're about here.
It's interesting. Every time I tell the story, I realize my story isn't unique, but I think it's important to tell it because a lot of people don't, right? So I was born in a small farming community in the state of Jalisco, a small town called Degollado. And my older sister and I were both born there. I have two younger siblings that were born here in the U.S. And it's interesting to see the dynamic between the two generations, right? Born over there and born over here. But I know because of immigration purposes, my dad was a migrant farm worker here in California. And so he would come up to the States and work and we'd stay back in Mexico.
Was that during the Braceros program?
It was after, but he still benefited from like the Reagan amnesty program and all that good stuff, right? But during my childhood, I got the opportunity to come to the U.S. for a year at a time. Then I'd go back and then come back and go back. So I was going back and forth a lot as a kid. We originally moved like in 85. I was living in Milpitas, right? Growing up over by Gold Cascade back in the days. But I didn't come to the U.S. permanently until the age of 14. So I would say the summer before my high school, freshman year of high school, is when we finally stayed. And at that time, I ended up enrolling and went to Silver Creek High School. Right?
Okay.
So I'm an East Side kid, right? Came to the U.S. San Jose and grew up in the East Side. And I went to Silver Creek not really knowing anybody because I'd come from Mexico. So it's not like every other kid that enters high school and they have all their friends that they kick it with. For me, it was 2,200 students, huge school, and I knew nobody. And so I immediately gravitated to what felt comfortable, which was all the raza, right? All the ESL students, all the kids that didn't speak English. And so for the next 4 years, I was embedded into that whole kind of raza thing. And for whatever circumstances, you start evolving in high school, freshman years, where you build your identity. And so some of the folks that I started hanging around with weren't necessarily the best folks, right? Some of them turned into sureños. Some of them were doing like graffiti.
Yeah.
And so you're guilty by association, right?
Yeah.
So
really quick, we have similar backgrounds.
Yeah.
I grew up in the streets of L.A. Junior high, I was hanging out with all the sureños. There were no norteños in L.A., but hanging out with the gangs, 18th Street, White Fence. Yep. It was the birth of Mara Salvatrucha.
Yeah.
So I got to see a lot of that as a child growing up. And so
San Jose was no LA, right? I won't say it was rough like that, but it definitely puts a lot of context. So one of the things I always say is I feel very blessed for all the different experiences and opportunities that I've had. Just to wrap up, right? I ended up going to Silver Creek, first generation in my family to go to high school, graduate high school. Wasn't surrounded by anybody that had gone to college. We were a very tight-knit first-gen immigration community. Not very many people in my family spoke English, cousins, uncles, whatever. And it was expected that I was going to end up in construction like everybody else, right? And
expected, huh?
Yeah,
expected,
well,
right?
Nobody really assumed that you could do anything else, right?
Yeah.
And so
quick, before we go further, did you know English? Were you in Mexico or did you learn your English?
No, so I'm also a product of a lot of these after-school programs, which is one of the reasons why I'm so involved in the community.
I love
after-school
programs.
Me too, right? So I did. It's funny because people tell me, you have no accent. I'm like, what, 7 years of ESL classes, right?
Okay.
So when we were here in the U.S.
That was when I was lost as a kid until I got caught. And I got caught because one of my boys ratted me out. And then when they disciplined me, the humiliation that I went through, scarred me that literally the next day I put away my Nike Cortez, my jeans, my everything that was blue, everything mm-hmm. that was stupid. I put it away and my life, yeah. like that changed. Yeah. So crazy days, man. But anyways, yeah.
That's a whole different chat. That's a whole yeah, different podcast about how we got out of it.
Now, that was a soundbite now. Now somebody's going to be like, that motherfucker was a tagger. He's not, no. Anyway, so.
But no, so what ended up happening was I thought I was going to go to MIT, master's, and do something with computer graphics, animation, mm-hmm. something like that, right? I used to love drawing. And when I went there and they had me do my placement exam, they told me that my math scores were really strong. And they're like, we should consider going into IT. And I was like, no, dude, I want to be an artist. I want to draw. I want to make cartoons. And they're like, well, here's how much you'll make as an artist. You know, you're going to have to intern for free for 2 years. And he's like, here's how much you'll work for going if you go for IT.
Nice.
And I was like, let's go for IT.
Amen to the person that told you. Do you remember the person that
No, not in that case. But
that was a trigger, just so you know, that was a fork in your life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
That was meant to be.
So I had an inkling, right? In high school, there was this, which I'll give her a shout out, Miss Miles, Nancy Miles. She was my computer teacher in high school. She definitely put the bug in me. I wanted to be a hacker after being in her class. And so that's why it wasn't that far-fetched for me to take this class, because it was like it was a continuance of that. But so that's one of the reasons why I ended up pursuing the IT side of the house. The program was like a 12-month program, right? It's not a 4-year university. It's not a real kind of college. It's more of I was the youngest person in the school. I was 17 because I'm an October kid. So I graduated high school super early. And so I was in school with most of these people who are like going to school because they're on disability and they have to learn another skill because they got hurt at whatever job they had, right? Okay. So most of these people were like midlife, switching career, not really interested in this, but they had to do this so they can get the disability check.
Yeah.
And there's me, right? And so I took it and I embraced it and I fell in love with it, right?
Nice.
And so I got what they'd call their associate's degree program before I turned 21. And I immediately started working in tech. I got a job working for a startup that at the time I had no idea what they did. I was a contractor for 6 months. I worked swing shift 4 p.m. to midnight, which was perfect because I would go to school during the day and work at night.
That's probably why you got the job.
Yeah.
That's a hard shift to cover, right?
Yeah. But and I was 17, 18 years old and they'd pay me to do my homework. So I loved it and I took it. And that alone is a whole other story that we'll get into about what that means. But that was how I went from being born and raised in Mexico to going through high school here, really, and just falling into that whole thing.
So you, in my research on you and the things that some of the stuff that we've outlined, you've been working on a book.
I have.
And it's The Survival Guide, An Immigrant Survival Guide to Silicon Valley.
That's right.
Now, the only way that you can even come up with stuff like that is because you have experience. And if you're saying IT, obviously we're in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. capital of the world of technology. Anything and everything is coming out of this valley. Share with us the experience that you have, because at this point today, as we're sitting here, you're vice president of HP.
Right.
In one of their divisions, which I want to dive into it, because HP is a global giant.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear so far right now, Latino, immigrant, troublemaker, fucking no formal education, no drive, but then starting to find your whys at an early age,
mm-hmm.
what got you there? And for you to then now want to put it in writing, that's got to be therapy, man. It's probably one of the most therapeutic things that you're probably going through right now.
Yeah, I would say the answer to the why and how is I have to give it to God, man. Like, this doesn't happen by mistake, right? Mm. I feel like all this is written. We all have a purpose. And once you find it, dude, it drives you, right? So the how, right? I feel super blessed for everything that's been given to me, right? And I always try to give back. And this is why I said at the beginning, I don't think that my story is unique. I don't think I work harder than all of our people that are doing roofing at 115 degrees on a summer, right? That's hard-ass work, right? Mm-hmm. So why me, right? I always ask that because I don't feel like I work harder than most of our gente. Our gente bust their ass every day, right? So to me, this is definitely God's purpose, right? There's something here. And so for me, it was, I reflect on the opportunities that I had. And this is one of the things that the messages that I always convey is, I got very lucky and very blessed. And one of the things that helped me the most is the fact that I was bilingual,
right? Okay.
In tech, we have a very small representation of Latinos, right?
That's right.
And so the first, and I've been in startups.
Well, you have all kinds of lack of representation in many, whether it's women, they use the term people of color.
BIPOCs, yeah.
And Latinos and just different. Yeah, no, it's the tech world. And there's other areas. There's the financial areas, mm-hmm. the banking world. There's different businesses, different parts of the world that have that. But Yeah, tech world, they've been going through that shit for a while now. They've been, and it's really surfaced now to the public now as Silicon Valley becomes bigger, powerful, it now gets the attention that it once didn't.
Yeah, no, and so for me, right, like I said, I got really lucky. Mm. I was working at a machine shop, actually, while I was finishing up master's. And
MIT,
MIT. And I had graduated already. Uh-huh. And in my mind was, okay, I graduated, but I already have a job. So I'm just going to hang out here at this machine shop and continue doing this because it's just comfortable, right?
Yeah.
But then I got frustrated because I was one of the youngest guys at the machine shop. I was probably the most productive guy on the machine shop. But I was probably making half as much as most of the guys that were there, right? Only because I was last in. And I remember I gave him an ultimatum. I was like, look, man, I'm doing all your production stuff. I'm doing all your hardcore work. You're leaving the difficult stuff for me. But yeah, those guys are making like twice as much as I am. So I was like, either you pay me what you're paying them or I'm leaving. Right. And at this point, I'm like, I just graduated from this class. Well, I was living with my parents. So it's not like I was like, I got to go figure things out. And so
no risk, no reward.
Exactly.
You just
right?
fucking laid no it risk, on the no table. Robbery, right. But yeah, that's all you call right. They gave you a tour without. All right. I love it. Got to give a shout out to my girl, Nancy, man.
Yeah, she's
definitely running the show now.
But no, man. So that was the moment where I feel like God said, it's time to jump out this nest. Right. You can't just sit this machine shop because that's where everyone else is at. You got to do something different. So I ended up going to Manpower. All this, I didn't know any better, right? So I went to all these staffing agencies, threw my resume out there. And 2 weeks later, I'll never forget, there's this lady named Cindy. I don't even know where she's at anymore. At this company that doesn't exist anymore called Target Staffing. She calls me up and she says, hey, I have a gig for you. It's 4 p.m. to midnight. It's in the tech space. I'm not sure what they do yet. But look, you just got to go there and you just got to look at these damn things. And if they turn red, you pick up the phone and you call somebody. That's it.
That's it.
It was like $19 an hour back then.
Sounds really
like,
high tech there, bro.
Oh, man, it was 2000. It was 1999, mm-hmm. right? So I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So I went and I got that job. And essentially my job was every 20 minutes, I had to walk into the server room and make sure the lights were green. And if any of the lights were red, I had to pick up this phone and call somebody. And then follow their instructions to connect the phone wire to the back of the system, and then that was it.
Oh, wow.
And then between those 20 minutes, I could do whatever I want. So I was doing homework, right? But I was always very curious.
It doesn't get better than that, dude.
But I got super curious about what all this equipment was, right? Because I was studying computers.
All the switches.
And these servers were, like, taller than me, right? So I was like, what the hell is all this stuff, man? Long story short, that company invented what we now know as text messaging.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so this company.
The company you're.
This startup that I was at, right? So what happened was they had actually patented the way of being able to send data over the cellular network, which hadn't been done before.
Wow.
And I had no idea. It's what's called SS7 networking, right? So SS7, right?
SS7.
Yeah, SS7 is the protocol. So I had no idea what this was, right? Sure. But I'm going to computer school. I'm loving all this stuff. I'm learning all this new stuff. And here's where the other part where God came in, right? Mm. Here's the other inflection point in my life. So my younger sister, Claudia, we're going to celebrate her quinceañera in Mexico, right? And so I'd already asked for the time off. And by the way, I'm a contractor. I got 6 months at this gig, right? And I'm a social butterfly. I make friends everywhere I go. And I also, I dejo la vergüenza en la casa, right?
Yeah, fuck, bro. There's no shame, man. Yeah. No shame in our game.
And so I already knew I was going to Mexico. And here's where God came in, man. I was sitting in this knock where we have these monitors. And the CEO of this 50-person company comes in, who I already had made friends with. And our VP of engineering, Korean guy, Terry Shaw, was sitting in the background.
And this is for the text messaging company that you're working for.
Yeah, and so the name of the company is called Aeris, A-E-R-I-S.
A-E-R-I-S.
So at that time, it was called Aeris Communications.
Damn, so they must have got paid when they sold that.
Well, yes and no. Let me see what happens. So I hear from them that they're planning this important meeting in Mexico City.
Uh-huh.
So there's Dick Gosson, who's a middle-aged white guy, doesn't speak a lick of Spanish, and the Korean VP of engineering, right? So I find this hilarious. So I turn around. I was like, so how's your Spanish? Right?
Uh-huh.
And then I said, I'm going to be in Mexico around the same time that you guys are. If you guys need somebody to translate, I got you. And I went like that, right?
Wow, man.
I was joking. Dude, I was 18 years old. Right? I had no business. And I was just joking around, fucking around. And he took me up on it.
Yeah. Well, fuck you. He's thinking, well, I don't have a fucking answer or solution. You just gave him the plug and play.
So just to give you context, the Goyado is an 8.5-hour bus ride to Mexico City, right? I have never been to Mexico City in my life. I know nobody in Mexico City, right? I'm 18 years old. My mom lets me get on a bus from the Goyado to Mexico City to go meet these guys, right? And I hadn't thought that far ahead. I was 18 years old. I didn't have a hotel to stay at. I didn't have a credit card. I didn't have anything.
Oh,
right?
Man.
All I knew is I was meeting these dudes at a restaurant the night before this important meeting. And I get there, and it's at one of these beautiful hotels, Marquis de Forma in Mexico City. We're having dinner, and I'm like, hey, where are you guys staying? They're like, well, we're staying here. And I'm looking at this hotel. It's like one of the most beautiful hotels I've ever seen. I was like, do the people back at home know you guys stay at places like this? And so when they found out I didn't have a hotel, they're like, they realized how young I was. And they're like, oh, we're going to get your room here. And back in the day, cell phones didn't have cameras, right? So I couldn't like take photos of this. I couldn't brag to anybody, right? No. Long story short, the meeting the next day was the company called Telcel, if you've heard of Telcel, right? Telcel is the largest cell phone company in Mexico. They're a subsidiary of Telmex. Right?
Yeah, is that Carlos?
Carlos Slim.
Carlos Slim. Wow.
So we're meeting with Telcel.
Carlos Slim, by the way, richest man in the fucking world. Yeah. In the world. I mean, I let's call it Mexico.
Depends on the oil price that day, right?
Wow.
But yeah, yes. So here I am, 18 years old, and here's the part I always laugh at, right? I had never been in a business meeting before, so I didn't know there was a difference between a party suit and a business suit. So I wore the suit. I was wearing my shirt and saying, to this meeting, right? Like shiny lapel, white socks, all the whole thing.
Fucking
right?
Sparkles and shit.
Not that far, not wedding singer status, but pretty close, right?
I have one of those, by the way. It's got a little shimmer to it. I call it my party suit. So I'm like, when I want to go fucking balls to the wall, I'm like, it's a little tight on the arm. So I'm like, yeah, what? Lo único que me falta son las pinches botas, cabrón.
No, man. See, I'm 6'3", dude. That thing was too long. I was bunching up at the bottom, white socks. Anyway, we get to the meeting, and I forget to translate. I get so excited that I know the answers that these questions people are asking me that I just start rolling with it, right?
Oh, shit. Okay.
And
all right.
About a third of the way through the meeting, I turned to Dick and to Harry. I was like, dude, I'm so sorry. He's like, keep going. Like, keep you're going. Doing fine. At 18 years old, dude, I closed the nationwide contract with Telcel. And essentially what they said is, look, we're going to give you a provisional contract. You're going to come into Mexico City. You're going to prove to us this shit works. You got 6 months. And if 6 months, we get this up and running, converts to a nationwide contract, and we're building this all over Mexico. So remember, I'm a contractor, right? I only got 2.5 months left on this contract, right? So after that meeting, again, because I spoke Spanish, after that meeting, these dudes were so excited. They're like, spend an extra week in Mexico. We'll see you when you get back.
Yeah.
When I got back, they gave me a $5,000 thank you bonus, and then they made me a permanent employee, and then they said, we need you to run this project for the next 2 years.
Wow.
So at 18, I started going to Mexico City every month for a week, 52 different sites all over Mexico to bring text messaging to Mexico.
Holy shit. Yeah.
At the time, it wasn't called text messaging, right? It was called wireless data over cellular. But our two main...
There was the two-way pagers, though, too?
No. So what we were doing is we were putting cellular radios inside of alarm panels.
Mm-hmm.
So you put a cellular radio in an alarm panel, so that way if the burglar cuts the phone line, the alarm can still go over the cellular network.
Yeah.
So that's the first application. The second one was Coca-Cola. They would put cellular radios on all of the Coke trucks,
mm-hmm.
because in Mexico, they would hijack the truck and take off with the truck. So this thing would send GPS coordinates and go recover the truck.
Oh, shit.
And it was all over cellular, right? So those are the two main applications.
This is exciting, man. Wow. Now I feel like I'm a little geek nerd over here wanting to learn about this shit. I'm like, I always wanted to hack a computer, but this is some cool shit here, man.
This is enemy of the state type of shit.
Yes.
Yeah, no, and again, I was 18, right? And so I did that for about 2 years. And one of the guys that was my manager at that company had left to go work for another company. And he calls me up and he's like, hey, he goes, we need a pre-sales engineer for all of Latin America Caribbean. And you're the only dude I know that speaks Spanish. You want to come or what, right? And so I took him up on it. And so I went to work for a company that did point-to-point microwave radio. So all the antennas that you see on the cell towers, the ones that look like big drums, we basically sold and installed those all over Latin America.
Wow.
No experience. I'm not an RF
engineer. How old are you at this time?
This is 21.
21. So you're not popping bottles. You're not fucking. You're not partying. Fucking. Man, your life is just... It's
all work, man.
Yeah, man. It's all grind. But it's on a whole different level.
Yeah.
Because your work ethic and your drive and your trajectory, bro, I can see why you're at where you're at today.
But at the time, you don't even think about it that way, right?
No.
Fucking great time. I used to work at the...
How much fucking money are you making at that time at your age? Relatively, you're 21 years old. What's a 21-year-old making at that time under the responsibilities that you have?
When I was a pre-sales engineer, they got me cheap, man. I didn't know any better. I was making $65,000 base in a pre-sales organization.
At 21, 65, that's still...
This is 2001, right?
Okay. So you just came out of a fucking dot-com bust.
Right.
We had 9/11.
Yes.
The world's fucking upside down.
So it's funny you say that. I signed that contract to be the pre-sales SE... September 1st of 2011.
10 days before, yeah.
Once that whole thing happened and I knew I was going to be on planes most of the time, I'm like, dude, I should ask for more money.
Yeah. Hazard pay.
Yeah.
And but, so think about it. You're where you're at in your life, 21 years old. You're working. Yeah, I want to say they exploited you, but at the same time, it was the learning ground.
It was mutually beneficial, right?
Absolutely.
So I guess the theme.
You can't buy that in education.
The theme of all of this, right? Yeah. It's like I'm saying, I grew up in the hog farms of the Goyado. I used to be picking up pig shit all the time. That's what I did for work over at the ranch. But one of the things that I've always said is when God puts an opportunity in front of you, you must be ready for it, right?
Amen.
And so you just got to go for it, right?
That's right.
Even though I didn't have formal education as a cellular network engineer, I was configuring cellular switches all over Mexico where these dudes have gone to training with like Ericsson and Motorola to learn how to do this. Here's this 18-year-old saying, everything you've learned is wrong, and here's how you have to do it now. Because they're like, there's no way in hell you're going to send data over this thing. You just can't. And yeah. I had to go there and teach them. When I did, they're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And so then I go in and become an RF engineer. And I became an RF engineer by trade.
RF is
radio frequency, right? Frequency, so we're doing point-to-point microwave radios, 20-mile point-to-point microwave links. You can't even see the other side. And I'm in here designing sites where it's like, this antenna's got to be 30 feet with 43 degrees azimuth, and this antenna's got to be 10 feet, and they got to meet in the middle. And you have to make these
fucking
physics, right?
We're going to definitely have a conversation about the shit that's in the air here.
Oh, yeah. No, I can get it.
Because I'm like, we don't see what's flying in the air, but there's got to be a lot of shit in the air.
And so, dude, I got to go on an oil rig for Pemex and do a 22-mile link from Pemex oil rig to land, right? And you can't even see the other side. And so I didn't go to school for this stuff, right? I was supposed to be fixing computers, dog.
No, you were supposed to be fucking doing hammer and fucking construction.
Well, it's funny because
if you would have went down that path.
When I studied at MIT, right, master's, mm-hmm. my goal was I was either going to work at Geek Squad or Fry's. That was like my...
Dude, that hurts my stomach when we...
You know what I mean? Just, I don't know different.
Right? Yeah.
And so this is what I'm saying, dude. God has so much to do with this, right? So at 21, I spent 3 years, 85% traveling to Latin America and the Caribbean. Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, you name it, man. Like I was
there's
got to
be had some fun in between.
Oh, yeah, of course. Not only that, but think about like, one of the topics.
I'd have
in
a girlfriend in every fucking country or
something. I was married at the time, so yo me portaba bien, yo me portaba bien. But I'll tell you, though, even that point, it gave me a purpose. I couldn't wait to come home.
Nice.
It kept me out of trouble, dude, honestly. I have buddies that would stay behind. I'm like, I got to go home. It's been 3 weeks. I got to go home.
Yeah.
But
But
I had to come out, right? And so, but that kept me focused, right? It kept me like, and I'll tell you, man, like throughout my entire career, I've always done something different. I don't have the experience for, but it's one of those things I always tell my managers. I'm like, look, I've never done this before, but if you give me enough patience, I'll figure this shit out.
Yeah.
And that's just how it's been. Even today in this role, I've never done this before. And we've got industry recognition on the stuff that we're doing. Like, we're killing it now. Wow. It's just one of those things. I used to DJ, and I used to do the nightclub stuff and that stuff. I used to be a house DJ. I started off in high school DJ, and then I started doing, like, raves and stuff like that, going a little bit. And then I started quinceañeras, weddings, all that stuff. So I used to love to DJ. But I tell people, like, working in the machine shop, DJing, being a carnicero, like, all these things. I used to be a mobile notary. Like, all these things help me today. When I stand in front of a crowd and I'm doing a keynote speech, it's like being a DJ all over again, right? Yeah. You got to hype up the crowd. You got to get the look. It's all so to me, like all these experiences build upon themselves. I tell my son, I was like, it's
how
like
many children, by the way? I never asked how many.
My joke is I have 4 kids, but only one of them is my fault.
Oh,
right?
Fuck.
So I have 3 stepkids and then I have a son of my own, right?
All right,
so,
there
so
you go.
But I have 4 kids. They're all.
And
they're
fucking comedian on the side too, huh? Jesus. All right.
But no. I tell my kids, for those of the younger people in the audience, right? Life is like a game, dude. Everything you do builds XP points.
Amen.
And once you get enough XP points, you level up, right? And so that's what I tell every trip I go on, every meeting I do, every podcast I do, it's more XP points, right?
Yeah.
Who knows how many levels this damn thing has, right? But we got to continue leveling up. We can't just stay in the same level, right?
That's right. Every day, and I'm going through this transformation right now that every day is a new level for me.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a small level, it's another level.
Yeah.
And for me, level is always going forward and up. That's progress.
Yeah.
And I do have my moments where I'm just like, fuck, Man, I got moments like where even today I want to get out of bed? Did I really want to go hit the gym? Did I really want to? And then I just start thinking and I'm like, no, I got to go. I got a bigger purpose. I got a bigger why in my life. And I don't know when it's going to happen and we don't know because it's already, you know, it's already written out.
Yeah.
Right. So I got to just keep going. I got to just keep going. I got to fucking just, you know, put that personal whatever voice is talking to me, put that motherfucker to sleep and be like, no, motherfucker. And I've had to go back to some of my roots of watching some of the videos, like David Goggins. Mm-hmm. I love David Goggins. His video and his aggression wakes me up. Les Brown, Eric Thomas, and I'm a big fan of Tony Robbins. Mm-hmm. But I need to get someone to be that aggressive to wake me up, because where I'm at and where I'm going, it needs to have a strong mindset, a tough mindset. What's interesting, I have some great mentors in my life, and they're like, Mauricio, he goes, haters we're always going to have. You're going to have some that are in your face. And then he goes, and I love when he says, he goes, you have the ones that are hiding in the bushes because they don't want to be seen.
Yeah.
But they're the ones that start firing off at you, and you got to be ready for that shit. Mm-hmm. So just again, man, it's just got to keep moving con ganas.
So a couple of things, right? So a couple of things. I think it's important to surround yourself with people that are going to call you on your shit, right?
Amen.
You gotta be surrounding yourself with people that aren't gonna let you stand still, right? That are gonna recognize, hey, Mauricio, I haven't seen you in a couple of days. What the fuck's going on, right?
Yeah.
And then second is, you can't stand still. I was at Cristo Rey High School this morning, right?
Yeah.
And I was talking to the students, and one of the common questions, I don't know what to study. It doesn't fucking matter. Just keep studying. Just keep doing. And I tell them, I've done this before. When we bring students into HP, I'll line up 5, 10, 15 executives, and I say, introduce yourself. What's your day job? But what did you study?
Mm.
And 99% of the time, the people that present, they study something completely different than what they're doing today.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if you want to be a software engineer, don't study that, because you probably won't end up doing that. You'll do something else. Like, I have a guy on my team that's kind of studying psychology. He's in charge of my business analytics team. Nothing to do with psychology, right?
Yeah.
People in HR, former engineers, right?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where, like, life will present itself, right? You just, it's like, what is a rolling moss, a rolling stone grows no moss, right? You just gotta keep it going, right?
Man, I'm while you're saying all this, my brain is just like fucking ping-ponging, trying to figure out, like, where else do we go here? So, man, so you're the stuff that you're involved in is, one, you can't get that in school.
No.
Period. We just call that out, right? I know that I was a double major at San Jose State on my fourth year of supposed to graduate. I fucking dropped out. I was like, I'm done with school. I know what I want to do. And I took on my career path, and that was the inspiration of my second book, which was Decide, Commit, Execute, where I made a decision. I committed to it, and I executed it, and I took off, right? No regrets in my life. And then taking off in my career from doing 25 years of entertainment, nightlife, concerts, events, but realizing that there was no, it just wasn't as rewarding anymore to me. It's like I almost fell out of love with the love of my life. And then I went through, obviously, my crash, 2008, and 2008, the world went upside down. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I had already experienced the crash of the .com in 2000. I experienced the wars. Mm-hmm. I experienced a lot of different shit. And then for me, that was a pivotal point in my life as well, too, where there's a pre-2008 Mauricio and there's a post-2008 Mauricio. And where I'm going with this is that before, it was all about me. Then post, it was about how can I be of service to others? What can I do to give back to community? And what I learned was very quickly that in the 25 years of doing entertainment, what I did in a very short period of time when I started, I pivoted. I went from 2008 to 2013. Life was fucking going through. I was going through my turbulence. But when I launched my next company that had nothing to do with what I was trained or what I was accustomed to, and I went from, which is interesting, is a staffing company.
Mm-hmm.
In 2014, started my company. In 5 years, I took that to $100 million.
Wow.
There's nothing that the entertainment can even catch up in 25 years, what I did in 5 years, right? And what I realized, though, and I don't know if it was just the formula or, I don't know, the universe talking to me, right? Mauricio, the more that you give and the more that you can help others help rise and lift, the more things just started coming my way. I figured out I cracked the code here, and now I'm going to just go do a lot of good and then expect to sit back.
Yeah, it doesn't
work. It's a work in progress. And where I'm going with this is that I also know that you've been involved in different activities and different organizations. Mm-hmm. I know that you're involved in the diversity. We talked about it earlier. Obviously, we want to see more Latinos in tech. We want to see more women in tech. We want to see more of everything other than just what is typically in that system. And then I know that you're also a supporter of women entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. The program is Emprendedoras.
Latina Emprendedoras, yeah.
And I want to dive into that because that to me excites me to, I would love to be in a room mm-hmm. full of women entrepreneurs because I got my bug is from my mother. My mom fucking, she was a fucking hustler, mm-hmm. was a single mom. And she had me and my sister. And she was just, whether mm-hmm. it was cutting hair, whether it was selling products, whether it was fucking, she's the one that planted the seed at a young age too, Mauricio. She calls me Chele, you need to get into real estate. And I'm like, real estate? And real estate just played in my head since I was a kid. Today, you're leading, not only as a top executive in Silicon Valley, Latino top executive in Silicon Valley. And we talked about this prior, obviously, not today, but we talked about it. And we're going to dive into that one. Share with us about this, the women, Latina entrepreneurs. And then I want to dive into the diversity.
Sure.
And then we're going to talk about the Latinos that are out there that are representing, but not representing. Yeah. And we won't call out anybody because we live in Silicon Valley. But I want to have that conversation because I know that I've gotten to where I'm at because I've used certain platforms. Mm-hmm. To, again, keep leveling up. So anyways, let's start with the Emprendedoras. I love that, Latina Emprendedoras. You know what? Talk to us about that and what inspired you on that one.
Yeah, so if you think about where we started the show, I mentioned that I would be living in Mexico with my mom and my dad would be here in the U.S. And so my mom wasn't content with just being at home and having my dad sending money back to Mexico. She just wasn't about just, I'm just going to sit here and not do nothing, right? So she was always looking for ways of contributing. So that's why I was selling women's shoes at the Tianguis with my mom, right?
And
my
mom—that's the root of it. That's the root of it.
And yes. My mom was different. She could have just gone and bought shoes from a reseller and then resold it. Nah, she would go down to the factories in León, Guanajuato. We would catch a bus at 4:30 in the morning. We go to León, and she would have them like make her shoes.
Wow.
Out of the factory, so she cut out the middleman. She understood margin, which I didn't know at the time, right? And she cut it out. And
margarine.
And so, if you think about it, we would take Greyhound-like buses full of boxes of shoes underneath from León, Guanajuato back to the Hoyado, and we'd be unloading them outside of the Mercado, and then my uncle would help pick us up, and we would sell them out of the house.
Wow.
And then on Sunday, she would have a little puesto at the tianguis, right? So that's where it started. And ever since I've known my mom, she's always sold something, done something. She's always, like your mom, always doing something, right? Keeping mm-hmm. busy. And so I remember coming to the U.S. and going to these Escuelita programs after school and all this other stuff. And now that I'm a product of these things, and I see all these different programs that are available for the Latino community, most of those programs are in English. And we all know that in the immigrant Latino household, the women run the house. Let's be real, right? And so for me, it's if I want to reach the youth and I want to go in and change the makeup of that Latino immigrant household, we got to start with the moms because that's where it all starts. And so it's like, how can we take all this information that exists about how to start a business, how to grow it, and make it available to people like my mom, mm-hmm. right? Because if my mom had a program like that, she'd probably run her own business right now, right?
Nice.
And so 7 years ago, we started with this program in collaboration with Yaconex Community, the nonprofit that I'm on the board of. And what is it called? It's called Yaconex Community.
Okay.
Yaconex Community. And so we
want to get that information at the end so that way we can plug it on our show, definitely.
And that's just one of the different programs that we run too. But we also run a program called Lideres Youth Fellowship where we bring Latino kids, they introduce them to tech as well and stuff. So we can talk about that. But this whole thing was like the first year we did it, we had maybe about 30 women come to the program and graduate, right? And basically we teach them how to start a business, how to write a business plan, marketing plan, all these things. This year, 7th annual, right, we had 165 women graduate. And we actually host it at HP. So they also get to come on campus into this dope high-tech building. They get to experience it. We had mariachi come in for lunch. And what's awesome
I want to talk at one of these events. I want to sponsor one of these events. Yeah. I want to see those eyes. Oh, I want to see that fucking fire because they got it.
They got it. And you know what's beautiful is every year we'll showcase a woman who's been part of the prior classes who's now built out their business. So we took a woman who used to sell flowers at Mexican restaurants out of buckets, and now she has Juanita's florist on McKee and 101, right?
Nice.
And like we have women that used to sell food out of their house, and now they have restaurants. And so every year, Juanita's Flowers comes and donates the flowers for the graduation ceremony, right?
Wow.
The catering is done by one of the women from previous years who brings, we have a lady that has a bakery and she brings conchas for the morning. Like it's full circle, right? But what it's doing is creating this community of like-minded women that ecosystem. Actually help each other out, right? And so to me, every year I'm the one that opens and I give like the morning greeting And I always tell them, I'm like, you guys remind me so much of my mother. Yes. And this is the way I give back to my mom, right?
Yes.
This is it, right?
Yes.
And this year, I actually teared up because I actually FaceTimed my mom while I was on stage. And I was like, look, right?
Yes.
And so.
And your mom is where?
So my mom and dad are retired. Okay. They live in Turlock, but they also have a house in Mexico. So I call them, they're like ducks. It just gets cold and they go back to Mexico and wait till it warms up and they come back, right? So so they're doing good, man.
It doesn't get that cold in California, though, but I get it.
My mom hates the rain. So when it starts raining, she leaves like right before Thanksgiving comes back. I tell her so she doesn't have to cook for us during the holidays. Right?
She doesn't want to do tamales over the holidays and shit. She's smart. Yeah, gets away during the Thanksgiving and gets away during the holidays. So,
so Latina Emprendedora is definitely my passion project. We usually do it every year around November.
Did you found that program or was it already existing?
No, so Yakanex and I started that program.
That's right.
So we've been doing that for 7 years and our goal is to get it to the point where we hold it at the convention center 1 year, man.
Man, congratulations on that, man. I definitely want to be a part of that.
Yeah, I would love
that. I would like for you to think about who should be on this show here with us, man. I would love to interview all the different talents that have come out. All that to me is inspiring. And again, we got to share the stories.
And it's been a journey, man, because we've been bootstrapping this, right? We didn't even become a formal 501c until like last year. So a lot of this stuff's been based on donations and just personal funding, right? So now we're getting to the point where people are now interested and we're looking for sponsors and donations because we want to make this thing bigger, right? And our goal is to always make it free.
That's right.
Right. I don't want to charge anybody to come to this. This is stuff that, should be available to everybody.
Yeah.
No, we partner with the consulate in the city of San Jose. And so we did all the folks come out there. But yeah, man.
No, man. We got to take that. Well, now that, the last 4 years have been rough, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that were you still during pandemic?
We had two sessions during COVID.
So in the last 4 years, you've only had two sessions or have you? How does that work?
No, so we've been doing it for 7 years.
Right.
Two of those years we did virtual.
Got it.
So the last 2 years we did them in person, but this year was definitely our largest so far. So
2020 for sure. 2020 was a virtual. 2021.
But the 2020 was actually interesting because we weren't constrained by geography. So we actually had women dialing in from like Texas and Chicago. So there's still something there, right?
Okay.
The problem is that the permit laws and all that stuff are going to be different in every state. So it's not like we can help them too much with here's how you're going to get your permit in Dallas.
Yeah.
But the whole thing about understanding margin and business plan, all that stuff still applies. Right?
Yeah.
So there's an opportunity to take some of that stuff and just open it up. But locally, we can help them out with all that stuff.
Why is there any involvement from HP? And do you see that HP, there's value in investing or being a part of this? You're hosting them at HP, right?
Yeah. I've purposely kept HP out of it because of the additional bureaucracy and scrutiny that gets into it, right?
Got it. Okay.
So I have an organization that I created called Unidos ERG Collaborative, which is a whole other side hustle. And the goal of that is to bring together Latino leaders that are leaders of their employee resource group at different companies, bring us together and network and share best practices. And so I use the cloak of Unidos ERG to host the women. So that way it's not an HPE event. It's Unidos is the one that's hosting it. And it's HPE is allowing us to borrow the venue.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. That way we don't have any issues of HPE does not agree to the reviews of this. I don't want to deal with all that stuff. So it's a way that we get around a lot of that bureaucracy and scrutiny.
Well, maybe it's time to grow it and scale it and take it somewhere else.
That's the goal. Like I said, every year I say this. We're going to keep doing this until you guys don't fit here anymore. And then we're going to go to the convention center.
You said this was the biggest class?
Yeah, we had about 165 women this year graduate.
Okay. Yeah. And does it start at 165 or is it, do you have a starting number and then certain people start to fall off? Or?
Yeah, so we had about, I would say like close to like maybe 400 women register this year.
Wow.
And with anything, you don't get 100% participation rate, right? But as we get more budget and we start doing more planning ahead of time, we are getting more and more. But I think what's happened also is we're starting to gain the trust of the community, right? The women, I call it the comadre factor, right?
Yeah.
The women that went this year will tell their comadres about it and they'll bring more next year. So that's what we're seeing as well, is it's starting to take off.
Well, and let me ask, the first year you started, what was your first class?
It was about 30 women.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, how did it double the next year?
Yeah, it's been growing exponentially every year. Yeah,
So you're seeing a scale in it happening.
And we just hosted a different version of that called Emprendete at the Mexican Heritage Plaza about a month ago.
Okay.
And it was more inclusive, so men and women. And we had almost 400 people at that one.
Got it. There so, you go. Yeah. Was that a version of a fundraiser or?
No, no, it was very similar. It was like Latina Emprendedora, but we also allowed men to come in.
Okay.
And so it was basically expanding the scope and just we wanted to test it to see how much participation we would get, and it doubled.
Wow. So, yeah. So imagine now if you do a version or a model of that and now open it up to both. But I like the fact that you're, even though it's, I don't want to say it's not inclusive, but it's inclusive of all Latina women, that it's got its own segment because it feels a little bit more intimate.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
It's got that, it's, and you're not just hoarding it out now and saying, okay, para todos now. No. It's, you want to nurture a certain segment and give them that courage and that's just that energy, man, just that drive. Or fire some of those drives and just fucking go.
These women bond and build relationships at this conference, right? That's the idea. We have a photo wall. We have flowers. So all these women connect and get to know each other, and they continue to support each other. And that's one of the things that we do is, look, you have a printing business. They have a restaurant. They're going to need menus. Why don't you guys work together, right? And so it's also a networking event, and they help each other out,
It's an ecosystem. It is. They all, so I've gone through some of these programs, and I've shared with you. I was I was part of LBAN, Latino Business Action Network, got my certificate from Stanford, for entrepreneurship. Their Dr. Porras was the person that's in charge. I got recommended from another entrepreneur, and I think they've become lenient now, but I know that you weren't allowed to get in unless you had made $1 million or raised. There were certain criterias, and I went to that program and successfully did it. And I liked that version of that because you got to see a lot of different Latino business entrepreneurs. One of the things that I wasn't too real fond was that a lot of them were coming out of state. There were a lot of them from Texas. For some reason, Texas was really showing or representing at this, which was cool. And we got to network. You got to see the dynamics in there. And then there's other programs out there where we have other Latino leaders they say that they want to do the empowerments, but sometimes they look at more, it's more of a business operation. And good for them, as long as the integrity can hold and be that catalyst or that springboard to really lift the Latino community, because I've always felt there's different versions of Latinos too. Growing up in L.A., man, the beat in L.A. is a lot. The hustle in L.A. is a lot different than the hustle in the Bay.
Agreed.
And when I've been to the East Coast, the hustle of Latinos in the East Coast, whether it's Miami or New York, man, you got to hold on to yourself because you don't know while they're talking to you, te quitaron los calzones. Yeah. They're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But one of the things that I liked about that other version of hustle is that at least that hustle is what's coming. Right. Here is fucking, they're looking at your face and they're smiling, and then you fucking turn around and you're just like, oh, fuck, what's that shit? I got backstabbed over here? What the fuck's going? Fuck, I don't even know how to avoid having to go dive deep into that one because I really don't want to be talking shit, but because I don't want to be that Latino that I talk about.
So
the Latinos in the bucket, right?
I'll get it rolling for you, right? And I love the crabs in the bucket thing, right? Because it's true, right? A lot of times people are trying to pull you down to pull themselves up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What I will tell you, right, is that at least for me, I feel like I'm really in tune with my purpose. And when I take a look at the work that we're doing with Latina Emprendedoras, right? Self-funded up until this point, bootstrapped, getting donations, right? And then I go to these events where Netflix is dropping $2 million checks on people to go in and continue to do what they're doing. And when I take a look at the impact, I have a hard time measuring the impact sometimes of some of these things that are happening. And I was like, dude, if you gave me $2 million,
fuck,
do you know what I could do with that, right? How many lives I could change,
you know how many fucking podcast studios I thought? No.
But like, for real, like, for us, Latina Emprendedora, we put it on with like a $5,000 budget, Mauricio, right?
Wow.
And everything else is donation. We got mariachi. We got the venue for free. Like, we're hustling, right? We're making it happen. If we had something like that, we would no doubt be in the convention center doing some dope-ass stuff.
That is what makes us so fucking badass, bro, because we make it happen.
Yeah.
We don't need the big budget, though they'll help. They'll be helpful, but we find a way.
Yeah.
We'll make a way.
Yeah.
And if there isn't one, we'll tear shit up to make one.
And
you know?
Doesn't take long. It doesn't take long for you to be in the circuit to realize and really figure out who's doing what, right? And so, to your point, right, I don't go and talk smack, whatever, but I also am very particular about who I let in, right?
That's right.
Because
there you go. I like that. I like the way you're positioning it. Yes.
Yeah, because look, everyone, I'm not going to be everybody's cup of tea, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like I lead from the heart and I don't try to be an asshole. Sometimes I come off maybe overly confident, but maybe cocky, but it's not ill-intended, right?
Right.
But for me, it's I know what I want, I know what I'm doing, I'm going to go after it. But I also feel like we're brands, right?
Right.
And so in the community, mm-hmm. I want one of these Latina emprendedoras to know that if they're working with Carlos, they're not going to get screwed.
Right.
And they're actually going to get value out of the stuff that we're doing. So I have to be very selective of who I let in. And I'm not just going to let anybody come and talk to these women because a lot of times they just want the leads.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so this isn't a sales pitch. This isn't me trying to help you
sell
more stuff.
For me, actually, it's about
right?
I want to fucking go fire them up.
Right?
And
exactly.
Fucking, like, not to think small, to think bigger.
Yeah.
Right? And I shared one of my experiences with you. I went to, I've shared, Stedman Graham is one of my mentors and good friend of mine as well. And I had him speak at an event here in Silicon Valley, and I got an opportunity to get on the mic, and fucking, you get me on the mic, and it's on, man, because I never know, and the room was full of 500 Latinos and Latinas, beautiful. Some great speakers came up and shared some great stories, talking about executive positions, and for me, it was, let me get on the mic, and let me see what switches I can turn on in these people's heads,
yeah,
because it's great to glorify an executive position, and I'm going to say it to you, too. I hope that along this way, the entrepreneurial spirit has been awakened either through your mom, because there is something in there right now, and maybe we'll find it somewhere, or maybe it's already happening. Maybe it's the book that opens up a million other doors for you. But the fact that we wake up the spirit, and so I told him, I said, it's great to be an executive. It's great to be a vice president. It's great to be the top dogs of these companies. But all my beautiful people out there, you guys need to start thinking about the ownership part of it, the creating side of it. You don't need to own it all, but if you just own a piece of the pie.
Here's what I'll tell you. I feel like this is my MBA.
Yes.
Right? If you take a look at everything I've done up until this point.
Yes.
I could get a job tomorrow working in supply chain, operations, manufacturing, sales. I've done it all. One of the things that I tell my people that I work with is, I'll never ask anybody to do something I wouldn't be willing to do myself. Because you know what? I've already done it.
That's right.
And so for me, I always say, I don't know what I want to do when I grew up. So I'm doing this until I figure it out. But I know it's not going to be this, right?
Good. So at least we got that out of the way now. Good.
For me, this is, I feel like there's two things here, right? I think, and I've actually had conversations about potentially leaving tech. And one of my mentors said, look, Carlos, there's not a lot of you up there. So right now, we need you up there, right?
Yes.
And so while I'm here, it's the story. This is why we're here today. It's to say, look, just because you didn't follow the traditional path doesn't mean you can't make it.
That's right.
So that's the summary of why we're here today, right?
Good.
To tell that story and be like, look, dude, like the cliche, if I can do it, you can do it, right?
Yeah.
I used to shovel pig shit for a living in Mexico, right? So that's one. But two, the network, the connections, the ideas that I've gotten out of these experiences will lead me to go in and build something of my own.
That's right.
And I was actually having a conversation with my buddy Robert on the way here. Mm-hmm. And I was like, look, man, I was like, when God's ready for me to go and lean into my purpose on that perspective, I'm probably going to quit or get fired from this company, and I will not pursue another role in tech.
Right. That'll be done.
I'm either going to double down on my Unidos ERG thing. I'm going to double down on doing more of this consulting and stuff for the book piece. Maybe partner up with somebody. Like, I'll figure out what my next gig is, but it's not going to be to make somebody else money.
That's right. Yeah. Well, good. I got it out of you, and that was the intent, is that we cannot limit ourselves. I, to be quite honest, I've never had a job in my life aside from working for my own company. The thought of it just turns my stomach, right? Mm-hmm. When I think about it. But I know it's a necessity, mm-hmm. right? For some. For me, I love banging my head against the wall, trying to figure out the pieces to this puzzle mm-hmm. in life. And it, because someone did that for me at a very young age. So, and I took it and ran with it, because that's just my journey, right? What we're doing, what you're doing now, and going back to why I would love to be a part of and speak at these events, is because, just like you could say it, if he could do it, if I could do it, you could do it too. You're in an executive position. Imagine that. So you bring others that they can say that, hey, I came from the streets, or I came from one of my business partners that you'll meet picking in the farms, farm worker, and now self-made. I can't share how much exactly, but hey, to be a Latino Mexicano from Guanajuato, mm-hmm. to be where he's at today, fuck, it feels great to walk in the room and say, yeah, without cockiness and arrogance, right? You still got to have a little edge, because you got to show that. But Yeah, to be able to walk in and, and feel confident like you, right? You walk in confident because you know your shit. You can compete against the best. And this is why sometimes I say I don't want to be – I don't want – someone told me the other day, Mauricio, have you applied for minority business owner? I'm like, no, fuck all that. I don't want to because I want to be able to compete against the best. He goes, well, sometimes you need a little push or a little something. And I'm like, no, that's just not – it goes against my values. If I'm going to go toe-to-toe – I wanted you to not look at my skin or my name. I want you to know that fucking my skill set is going to fuck your skill set up because my work ethic is impeccable. And I'll outwork anybody. If put to the challenge, I'll outwork anybody. Put to any challenge, right? I think that once we get challenged, I think we take it to the next level. And that's where I'm at right now in the last couple of months. I was challenged by my friend who then became my coach. And in the last 4 to 5 months, I've lost 25 pounds. I was a fucking from 230, which was the heaviest that I've ever been in my life. To now, you know, I'm floating between 210 and 207, 205, you know, was like my lowest weight, and it felt good. So now I'm challenging myself because you hit these peaks and valleys and then these plateaus. So now I got to challenge myself even more. I got to tighten the belt a little bit more in order for me to get into that fire, right? Yeah. So it's just, it's continuous. It's a continuous thing. We don't stop.
Yeah.
We can't stop. And then what you're doing right now, I'm glad to hear that. That just even motivates me more to like, all right, let's see what we can do to, again, continue to impact our community because no one else is going to make an impact in our community except us.
And I know this is a sore spot or not a sore spot, but I'm going to get a reaction from you, right? When we talk about DEI. And so I know that you have a perspective on that, right? For me, it goes back to the comment that my friend made, my mentor, where he said, look, Carlos, right now there's not a lot of you up there. We need you up there, right? And so people have a misconception of DEI that's not too far from like affirmative action, right?
Yeah.
And so we were talking about this.
Yeah.
And one of the examples that I gave was it's not necessarily about opening the door so that more Latinos can be at this company, right? So DEI stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? So from a diversity perspective, I would say that's probably the closest where it's like we are keeping track of the representation. I sit on the DEI exec board for HP and I represent the Latino community. And for us, it's to make sure that the Latino employees that are already there are being treated equitably.
Nice. Okay.
Which means that, I'll give you an example. We have employees that have come from Mexico and have transferred to the U.S. And one of the things that we found is it would take them up to 10 years of working for the company to get equal pay for those of their colleagues that have been here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so that stuff's bullshit, right? Yeah. So it's those types of things that come out of
it's exploitation. Right? So I get it. Okay, but you put some controls in there.
So what DEI does is it tries to make sure that everybody has an equal shot, right? It doesn't matter if you're white, black, it doesn't matter. Everyone's treated equally. And the second piece that sometimes people don't think about is from the equity and inclusion part is that it's not just about race, right? It's also we have veterans that are part of the company. We have people that have disabilities. We have mothers and women, right? So there's all these communities that sometimes aren't thought about. And so the DEI part of the company takes that into consideration and makes sure that they're considered.
Right.
And one of the examples that I gave is whenever we do an all-hands meeting, we have somebody doing sign language.
Okay.
Because there might be people that are deaf. And so
now, is that whether you know it or not, or just because that's just the way it is? Is it... Or are those meetings being televised or recorded so that in case somebody does see it, tune in later? Is that kind of the thinking behind it?
So these are the corporate town halls. CEOs basically are State of the Union. Right?
Okay.
And so they're being done live.
Yeah.
They're being done live. And we have multi-language support. We have sign language. There's all these things. And so it's things that when you're at a startup, you don't think about these things. So by the way, 99% of my career is all startup. This is my first non-startup company that I've been at, right? And worked my way up through. But what I would say is from a DEI perspective, that's where I feel that I can add value, right? It's making sure that, I'll give you another example. We have an internship program where we bring interns from all these colleges to come in and have work. And when I first started working at HP, there wasn't any Latinos in the internship program. And so I started asking why. Well, statistics show that about 80, 90% of Latino students are working while they're going to school. So when HPE would go to these universities to try to go and find talent, our people were working. So what do they say? If you don't like the fish you're catching, you got to change the bait. So you got to change the way that you're looking for these interns.
That's
and so we actually organized a internship boot camp, and we didn't go to Stanford and Berkeley. We went to the JCs.
Yeah.
We went to Mission. We went to De Anza. We went to San Jose City. And we said, look, here are the jobs that are open. Here are the qualifications that you need. Brought like 40 students in, and we got them trained, did mock-up interviews and stuff, and every year since then, we've had Latino representation as part of the internship program.
Yeah. Right? I actually sponsored, and that's how I met Stedman. There was students from Notre Dame University that through my mentor Ray Reese, who was consulting for Notre Dame University, who has a big relationship with HP. Mm-hmm. And I remember 2018, we did a sponsorship where we sponsored a few kids for some kind of summer mm-hmm. Program at HP, and they were Latinos. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the name, and I'll remember. And I remember that I went to their breakfast, a version of a graduation sure. at HP. We got to sit in the boardroom at HP, nice. And it was really nice. And it was just really, you can see how thankful everybody was. And I was just like, it felt so good inside just because it was a version. Even though tech world is not a big thing, it was just something that a mentor has. Hey, would you mind sponsoring some students, some kids that were just graduated? Freshmen's in university.
And I'll go back to your point, right? The entrepreneur part is definitely in there. But right now, I really have to take advantage of the platform that I have in front of me to do as much as I can, right? So only God knows how long I'm going to be doing this and how long I'm going to have this opportunity. But while I'm here, dude, I'm going to be milking the hell out of it.
My call here is that I need to wake up everybody's entrepreneurial spirit, whether they want it or not yet. Yeah. I just want to remind everyone that the entrepreneurial spirit lives in us. Mm-hmm. And if you want to fuel it, you fuel it. If you don't, that's cool. Let that fire dance. And if you're happy where you're at in your life today, I'm happy for you. But if you're not happy, in order to get to wherever else you want to be, you must change. Mm-hmm. They always say, you know, doing the same thing over and over is a version of insanity, you know. You want to change life, fucking take action and make it happen. And there is no limit other than the limit you put upon yourself. You know, people ask me, Mauricio, how do you do all the different things you do? It's because I want to.
Exactly.
Even though it's a version of insanity for me, because if I just focus on one thing, that one thing, well, I've been blessed that the things that I have focused and the times that I have focused, the things take off. If they don't take off, I know how to cut them off out of my life so that it doesn't suck all the energy out of me. And I move on to the next project. That's why they say, Mauricio, you're like a deal junkie. I'm like, well, you don't know what you don't know until you try it, right? Yeah. Who would have thought that in COVID, when I started my Mauricio Mejia Live brand, it was out of necessity. It was because the world had been cut off from us. Mm-hmm. Invention is the mother of necessity. So fucking I invented Mauricio Mejia Live. And that started because of my first book that never got published, Smoke and Mirrors. Mm-hmm. There was too many things that were supposed to happen in 2020 that blew up. Yeah. My billion-dollar unicorn. I don't know if I shared. Latin Life was my Latin media company that was going to go public, fucking blew up. I had to do something. And so my therapy was the books, Mauricio Mejia Live, and who would have thought that I did two seasons of, you know, because we were locked up for 2 years, right? I did 2 years, and I always tell people, I said, once my ratings went down, on the views went down, I was like, fuck, the show's over. It's all right. I had to cut it. Now, it's interestingly enough, we kicked this off, and the brand is slowly growing. Actually, I take that back. In the last 4 to 5 weeks, the shit fucking quadrupled. It went from 1,000 subscribers to, so I think we broke 6,000 subscribers, and we're growing. And to me, that is, it's just crazy to just see the growth. Then the people that have shared the room, and that's one of the things we talked about, is we don't want just anybody in here. We want people that are going to bring energy, that are going to bring good, that are going to inspire others to elevate, man. And it's about sharing. Yeah. And at the end of the day, fuck, man, we got to make an impact while we're here.
One of the things I always say, right, is that I know I'm a person of faith, and I know that the day's going to come in front of my maker, and he's going to ask, what'd you do with everything I gave you, right? And I feel like I got to have a good answer for that, right?
Yeah. I saved it all for you. Right. That's the wrong answer, buddy. You needed to share with the world, and that's, yeah.
Look, I'll tell you, man, life-changing moment for me is I almost died during COVID.
Oh, right? Wow.
I was out for about 8 weeks, and I didn't think I was going to make it.
It's okay.
And I actually said goodbye to my family, man. I thought I was done.
Did you have COVID?
Yeah.
Oh, no, shit.
I mean, I was down for 8 weeks, dude. I didn't think I was going to make it back. And that was my life-changing moment. And that's when I realized, I remember reading something that says that there's nothing worse than regret, right? And when you're sitting there and you're regretting all the things that you didn't do. And so now I live my life with like, fuck, tomorrow's not guaranteed.
Yeah.
So right now, if you see my Instagram post, I spend as much time as I can with my kids.
Yeah.
As much thing I'm taking. I took my kid to Paris, man. I was like, what the hell? Fuck it. Going to Paris. I'm going to go see Leo Messi play in Paris, man.
So I'm going to challenge you. Yeah. Since you talk about a man of faith, you talk about life-changing experiences, and I was challenged, and that's why I'm at where I'm at today. My friend challenged me, and the only reason why I accepted the challenge was because in order to do things in life, you have to see results, right? My friend came to me, and I know this guy and I, fucking, we partied with the best. We've had amazing times. But we were in different circles in different worlds, and then the universe brought us together. And literally, he used my own fucking words against me. And fucking, so I felt like I got slapped in the face. And he says, Mauricio, we know you in business. We see all your successes. You talk about all your successes. But your outside doesn't represent what's on your inside. And I was like, whoo, bro. I'm like, you're lucky you're my boy, because now I feel like I got fucking insulted. But what he did was, it was a reality check for me, because my life is important. Your life is important, because you got a lot of people to also continue to make an impact on. So I challenge you that if that is important to you, that you also take a deep dive and really look at where you're at today. And if you can say that I'm happy where I'm at, then hey, by all means. If not, my brother, you're going to jump on a journey with me, and we're going to do this journey together, and we're going to take it to the next level, okay?
So I'll tell you, January 20th was a life-changing experience for me, man.
Yeah.
I was so blessed, and I felt like I had to give back and say thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a 3-day pilgrimage from Degollado, Jalisco, to San Juan de los Lagos. It was 75 miles walking through the hills of the highlands of Mexico.
Wow.
3 days, 13 hours a day, just me and God.
So that's
I feel pretty comfortable answering you that. Yeah, okay. Dude, like, I know I'm not there yet, but I know where I got to go, and I know I'm not alone.
We need support. That's right. Amen. Thank you for saying that, because I'm not alone. I got a group of supporters around me too. As much as we want to now help everyone, the only thing that we have now is really our health.
Mm-hmm.
Because wealth, we're wealthy in many ways. We have wealth and knowledge. Mm-hmm. We're billionaires in knowledge. We're billionaires in reach and making an impact. But if we want to continue that and be good with it, we need to start taking care of our health too. I think we got to continue to work, like I'm working on it. We all got to continue to work on ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's why for me, it's important, because I did 25 years of damage in my body.
Yep.
Now, I don't mind having a tequila here. So, and I want to go into that one. You have a big tequila collection, and pero no tequila, cabrón. What happened here? Empty-handed to the. That's Nancy's fault right there for not bringing it. Nancy.
It is.
No, she thought that. Marca, hold on.
Nah. We'll bring it back for sure. I only live down the street, so it won't take us long to get here, man.
All right.
But now, look, I mentioned, right, I was born and raised in the Hueo, Jalisco, right?
Yeah.
It's called Los Altos de Jalisco, the highlands of Jalisco. The elevation is like 6,000 feet above sea level, right? And it's a very unique area of Jalisco.
Fucking the oxygen up there, air.
And that's where the walk was, right? I walked 120 kilometers in 3 days, right?
Damn, bro.
And I went and I did Mission Peak thinking I was ready. It's the equivalent of doing Mission Peak 10 times in one day.
Wow.
Right? Our first day was 29 miles, right? And it was just insane. But the reason I bring this up is because that whole region is known for agave, right?
Yeah.
And so I was raised in the agave fields, and I feel like I have a connection with it that's bigger than a lot of these influencers who jump on and they're promoting tequila and they're talking about, oh, this is good tequila and all the marketing that happens. And I'm like, no, the shit my grandpa drank was good. This is crap, right? And so for me, the tequila thing isn't necessarily just, it's not a hype for me. It's my heritage, man. It's where I come from. I used to joke and say, I had tequila in my baby bottle, man. And I can tell you, man, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't drink a lot.
Hey, can I do tequila and protein? Can I mix that? Come on. Protein and tequila. That we do a little shake, tequila, protein shake.
It's organic. But yeah, if you get the right stuff, it's organic.
It's a plant.
Just don't do the Mark Wahlberg stuff. But no, for me, I don't know. I guess I just get triggered by, in many things, I get motivated by people to do stuff, right? When I see people that frustrate me, I try to do something to counter it.
Mm.
And that's how Unidos ERG came up. It's why I bought the Latino Leadership .com, right? It's a lot of those things,
bro. You
right?
went there, bro. You went there.
And so it's a little Easter egg. And I started.
You know,
Instagram.
I own SiliconValleyLatino.com right now. Yeah, we're going there.
We're gonna start pointing together. But no, for me, I don't have a whole lot of followers, man. But the followers that I have are legit. These are owners of distilleries in Jalisco, and I've had the opportunity to fly down there and meet with them and get the private tours and share a glass of tequila with people that have been in the industry for 100 years, man, making some dope stuff and learning about how it's made. And I have agave in my parents' land back at home. Like, we're part of it, right? Nice. We're part of this. And so To me, it's more of I can go out and I don't really drink, right? I'm not a big drinker, but I will have a good glass of tequila and
all
I sip
right. Surprised.
It,
right? You guys, you caught me off guard. All right.
Man,
all right.
Man, I've never done
drugs. I thought you were a big tequilero. No, I'm going to have to save some calories so that I can go have a nice tequila shot. Be like, yes, I had one tequila shot.
Yeah,
two
no,
maybe.
Man.
The third one fucking was out.
So what's interesting, though, is that I'm really amazed at how welcoming this whole community is, right? I go and I talk to one distiller and he introduces me to his own competition. He's like, you got to go visit Salvador next. You got to go visit Carlos next. And they introduce me to each other. And this dope ass community of people that just want to make some good stuff, and it's heritage, it's history, it's multi generations of people doing this stuff, and you see the whole thing, right? The people working the field, los quemadores, like
yes.
The art behind that,
yes.
Right? These dudes are ripping these things out of the dirt and can actually tell you what the sugar levels of an agave are at 3 to 5 years of maturity. Like that to me is just dope. It's when you take a look at the wine. This is where I give my friend over there crap about wine, which is like, how long does it take for a grape to grow on the vine, and then how long does it take for it to show up in a bottle, right?
Yeah.
You have a shot of good tequila, it took 13 years to get to your table.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for a good one.
For a good one.
Yes.
Okay? And so that's why for me it's like tequila and wine will never compare because, you know, you'll have grapes come in every year or whatever, right? But a tequila, dude, there's so much, and then you ruin it by putting salt and lime on it. And
No. I learned my lesson at a very young age. Margaritas, the Jose Cuervo margaritas were not my friend. And then when I really learned how to drink tequila, I was like.
So if you ever want a good margarita, go to San Francisco and go to Tommy's.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm Van Ness. Yes,
sir.
Yes, yes.
So that guy is
Van Ness or Geary?
I think he's on
Geary.
Geary. Yeah, he's tequila royalty. So got he's it. Actually
Yeah, you
family.
walk into his place and it's fucking.
He's family related to the Camarena family. We make stuff, which makes Tapatio and makes the El Tesoro tequila.
Okay.
And anybody who's anybody in the industry will not go to San Francisco without visiting Tommy's.
Yes, I've been there. Yes.
So
nice. Well, we're going to definitely have to do some tequila and want to talk about the business side of that, because maybe that's the opportunity that we do some business together, because my business partner and I have been talking about this for the last 3 years, but we just don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
And
road trip.
Yeah, that's right.
Road trip.
Exactly. R&D. I won't be here for a couple of tapings, but we're going to, because we're doing research and development.
I got some roadmaps. You can take this on the road, man.
Yeah. No, seriously. I definitely want to do that. And I know that when I share this with my partner, he's going to definitely be interested.
Yeah.
The thing where we always got stuck in is, and we actually, we thought of the name. It was interesting. And I was like, it's sacrilegious here, but Manos de Dios Tequila. He wanted to call him like, bro. Are you? That's you're playing with God here, dude. I go. You better understand. He goes, no, but I think I like. I'm like, no. Let's keep exploring on our name, but God will tell us what the name is going to be for this thing.
Yeah.
Man, not Manos de Dios.
Yeah.
But
it's funny. The photo on the back of my book was taken at one of the agave distilleries.
Yeah. When is the book coming out? What's the deal here? We just flew through that one in their conversation. When's it coming out? And when it comes out, we're going on a book tour here because I think that. It'd be a great story to share two Latinos books talking about two different worlds because...
Yours is coming out.
My third book is coming out, like yes. Technically, it's supposed to be tomorrow, the 13th, and there's a whole reason. Tomorrow, by the way, March 13th is the anniversary. Well, it is the anniversary of the official day that they announced COVID 4 years
That's
ago.
That's right.
Is when they announced Santa Clara County was the first county in the United States to declare shelter in place. And on the 16th, which was a Monday, Friday was the 13th. Crazy, right? Friday the 13th of March. And then on Monday the 16th is when they went full blown, and everything got shut the fuck down. So.
You know what's so funny? I'm looking at my boy over there right now. When COVID hit, we thought it was all hype, right?
Yeah.
And people started not showing up to the office, right? And we're like, this is bullshit. They're just faking it. They're using it as an excuse. I'm like, we're going to stay here until they won't let us come back.
Yeah.
And we were the last people in the office. We're like, dude, this is real. We should probably not be coming to the office. And I remember they had a gallon of hand sanitizer. And I was like, well, no one's going to need this anymore. So I just grabbed it and walked out with it.
You know how valuable that was?
Oh, I'll tell you. It was like a week later, you couldn't find the damn thing.
Yeah.
I had my souvenir gallon of hand sanitizer.
It was crazy. So... Part of the book that I'm releasing, actually, is not the full book. I'm working on a bigger book called Inflict Power. And inflict power, it's some people might look at it as inflict power. Yeah, no, inflict power. I need to inflict power into myself in order to catapult and take me to the next level. The book that I'm reading, that I'm finishing up right now, it's a version of, so it's going to be a three-part mini-series. My first one was Decide, Commit, Execute. The next one is Assess, Address, Move On. So we have to assess things, right? The situation, address it, really just take hands on it. And then once we do that, move on. Don't get fucking stuck. And I think what's happened in just recently is that I've been so deep into this book that I caught myself in my own fucking mind and I'm, fuck, Mauricio, okay, you've addressed it. Now move on. And I'm like, no, I haven't addressed it. No, move on. And then I have the third one that we're working on as well as far as the infrastructure. But when we collect and we put all these together, it's going to be a bigger mission. Well, the reason why I say that is because, which was crazy, I didn't plan this, but March 15th is the anniversary of the Ides of March, which when Caesar was assassinated. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because during that time, I 2019, I had just gone through a fucking ugly breakup in business. Talk about craziness, right? $100 million company, 2019, breakup. I'm like, I'm a billionaire. I have a billion-dollar company right around the corner. I'm not tripping. Billion-dollar company, blows up. The books, everything that I'm teeing up for this greatness that I'm thinking, right? I think I'm in control, right? It's just pop. It's just exploding. So to me, I felt that this was the Ides of March, which is almost a resurrection of I'm going against the grain. Yeah, they assassinated this guy, but they assassinated him, but they didn't assassinate his character and who he then became. So I'm using that as my rocket fuel as I launch. So, but yeah, man, it's some interesting times that we're in right now.
God's will, God's timing, bro. It's going to happen when it's going
to
happen.
We got to continue this conversation. We got to continue to support each other. Yeah. You've accepted the challenge, which I haven't even told you yet, but you're part of the team now. And you don't, now that I know you only live so far, there's no excuse.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not part of the 4 a.m. club. No. I'm just letting you that know right now. That is not what I'm signing up for.
Other than all right, 6:30, bro. 6:30. Yeah. The 4 a.m. club, to me, actually, that's such a great challenge. I've disciplined myself, and I do it more because I don't want to let down my team, but more because I can do it, but I can only do it once because, fuck, I'm tired. I literally, 3:30 in the morning, I'm at the gym by 4 a.m., class starts, and then at 5 a.m., my coach comes in, and I'm going to switch that up because going back-to-back, my body's just not. So I'd rather just do after that, go jump into my cardios and do some walking and stuff because it's a burnout. Yeah. But what I have seen is that the fact that I can do it. And then the next day I feel it. But it's interestingly because now I wake up at 3:30, automatic, my brain, eyes open up. I'm like, no, dude, go back to sleep. You went to sleep at 11 o'clock, not 8 o'clock. Because when you do that, you got to discipline.
Yep.
You got to be in bed by 8. So that you can start dozing off, and then by 9, you're forced and fucking lights out. I'm playing some relaxing meditation music so that my brain can just...
I fall asleep to rain sounds, man.
Yeah. I can't do it because then I got to go pee.
I'll tell you, though, after that walk...
Yes.
I have a whole new definition of what difficult is.
Oof.
Right? Because that to me is now my bar. If I can walk 30 fucking miles in a day... Yeah. That everything else by comparison is easier.
I rode a bike 40 miles in a couple of hours, but damn, that's a whole different story,
bro.
So
just to add, right, and I can show you, I have the All Trails map. We climbed 3,900 feet in day one, right? So we had to walk 8 miles, and then we ascended for 3,900 feet. And then walked the rest, right, at 7,000 feet above sea level.
Wow.
That was day one of three. And so now... And again, I thought I prepared by going to Mission Peak once or twice. Do that? No way. No. There was no preparing for it. But point is
the mental toughness
in
required.
Comparison to that, anything is easier. And not only that, but they've already announced the date for next year, January 20th, 2025. I'm doing it again.
Wow.
So that all right, to me is my new kind of go-to.
I'm going to have to prepare for that one.
Let's make it.
You know what's interesting is when I went to Mexico for the first time, yeah, the elevation where I was at, I was in Metepec. And the elevation, and then my friend has a vacation home up in the mountains. Up, it's
8,000-9,000 feet up there, I think.
Yes, and it's the rim of the volcano, because that's what Toluca is, right? They have I felt like I was going through the jungles and all this craziness. And then I did a ritual. It wasn't peyote. It was, there's another one. Fuck. Ayahuasca.
Oh, yeah.
I did that. Oh, bro, that was a, and I was like, me sacaron el diablo, cabrón. I was like, that's a whole story.
Ayahuasca.
Yeah, that whole thing was an interesting thing, experience. But yeah, man, Mexico is, and I remember the feeling of the, like, I remember when I was sleeping, I was like my lungs, I was like, but. Yeah. Part mind, but at the same time, you need to do some adjusting to the elevation. So
yeah, well, I'll tell you, man. Like it all goes back to that walk was. It was a combination of you just need to get your off your ass and change the rhythm. So it's like a huge reset.
That's right.
But it was also a way for me to give thanks because you know it was a very spiritual journey for me, and it's funny because you know a lot of people do this walk because they have a manda, right? Like. They asked for a miracle. The miracle came through. So now they have this debt, right? So they got to do this. And so I'm doing this walk thinking, all these people have to do this. I'm doing this by choice, right? I want to do this. I don't really have a purpose, but I'm doing it. And knowing me, I'm like, I have to be tied to a purpose. So what I did was I started a GoFundMe page, and I actually decided to dedicate the walk to an orphanage in Guadalajara. And so I raised money during the walk.
Damn, bro. I love this.
Yeah, Nancy helped me out for that too. And so when I was walking... the entire time you're like, I'm gonna stop. I'm like, this is crazy. What the hell am I doing here? I don't even have to be here. But it was those kids that made me finish, man. Yeah. But then when I got to
the
church,
you're fighting against yourself. Yeah. Your mind. You're fighting. But that's crazy,
when
man.
When I walked into the church, again, I didn't think that there was anything more than just the kids, right? But when I walked to the church and I looked up and I looked at Jesus and I looked at the Virgin, the message that I received was you were supposed to die during COVID.
Yeah.
And you didn't.
Yeah.
And all the blessings that I've received from that point in the last 3 to 4 years flashed between my eyes, and I just started fucking crying.
Oh, damn.
I lost it, man. Yeah. And that's when I realized that I also had a purpose for this walk. It wasn't just me. And what was awesome is before we did the walk, they actually held mass for us at 3 o'clock in the morning, the day that we started the walk. And one of the things the priest said, I'll never forget it, he goes, you guys think you picked to be here. You guys didn't pick to be here. God chose for you to be here. Like, you guys have to be. Like, you guys are here for a reason. And that sat with me the entire time. And not only that, but the priest walked with us.
Yeah. You're here for a reason right now. Yeah. You're here to share not only the dream you had to be here and talk about this, and then you're here because we got to share to continue this journey, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And so with that, man, thanks for letting me be here.
Yeah.
And like I said, it sounds super corny, but this is literally a dream come true, right?
Thank you, man. That is the ultimate compliment to hear that from you, from another Latino, you inspire me, man. Just so people that have been here have had an impact on me, and to see and hear the story and what you've been through, and to, again, to sum it up, from immigrant to executive, a vice president of one of the largest, biggest global companies in the world. And then Latino?
And my team's 85% Hispanic, too, man.
There you go. So that, to me, continues to inspire me to continue to do what I'm doing, to keep sharing that there's other great people out there doing great things. Yeah. And that's you, my brother, that's what you're doing. And I'm going to continue to support that growth and that path. And this is the only the beginning of a friendship and future partnership. So thank you for being here, man. Thank you for being on the show, and we got a lot of work ahead of us. So
but the reason that this is a dream come true is we talked about this, right? So I have a book coming out.
Yes.
And I had no intent of writing a book. I didn't think I was worthy of writing a book. I'm like, who the hell wants to hear about me, right? But again, I'm a person of faith, and I feel God speaks to me in my dreams and in repetition. And I had a dream about 3 years ago that I was, at the time, I thought it was a radio station. I realized it was Mauricio Mejia Yaev, right? And I was being
interviewed. Some version of a radio station.
Yeah.
It's inspired by a radio.
Exactly.
He asked the question differently. He wanted it to be a radio station. Well, you got a former radio station guy now.
Yeah, no. So in the dream, I had a podcast mic in front of my face. I had the headphones, and I was being interviewed talking about this book I'd just written. And the name of the book kept getting repeated during the interview, right? And I'm not somebody that remembers my dreams in the morning, but I could not remember this dream. And so when I woke up, I said, The Immigrant Survivor Guide to Silicon Valley. Like, this is a book I have to write.
Powerful, man.
And I wish I would have come up with that name myself, but it was given to me. So the way I look at it is this is my purpose, right? Mm. And so what is the book about, right? You know, as I engage with early career folks, whether it be Latino, it doesn't really matter. And the reason this is the Immigrant Survivor Guide, not the Latino, because I feel like we all share Very similar virtues, right?
All right.
As immigrants, we all come here with that pursuit of happiness. We have that hustle. We have that survivalistic instinct, right? We're all trying to do something and do better than where we were at before. And so I feel like a lot of the things that we always discuss, if I'm on a panel or if I'm doing a keynote or whatever.
It's going to be a fucking bestseller, bro. The more I think about it right now, just in my mind.
And so to me, I didn't want to just constrain this to be like, it's the Latino. No, man, this pertains to all of it, right?
No.
And sometimes when I do keynotes, I actually start my keynote by saying, before I get started, I want to know my audience. So raise your hand if you're born in another country. I don't care if you're from Salvador, Mexico. Yeah. Kuwait, raise your hand if you're in another country, right? And you look at the audience, you see how many hands go up, right? I was like, keep your hands up. Now, raise your hands if your parents were born in another country. And then you see the rest of the audience. By the time I get to generation three, like 99% of the hands are up.
Hello.
I'm like, look around. We're all immigrants.
In Mexico, by the way. Right. Because, so I don't know.
And so that's why, to me, that's why I was like, this is why that name is so important. And then again, it didn't come from me, so I'm not going to change it.
Wow.
But the topic of the book is around some of the things that people normally ask. I can't read that.
I can't see, man.
We have to get her something other than pink.
You know, fucking a black marker, please. Give her a black Sharpie, please. Somebody.
When is it released? Yeah.
We love you, Nancy.
When do you get it?
Strike
when
two. All right.
So some of the key topics in the book are around imposter syndrome, right?
Yes.
This is something that comes up a lot.
We had a conversation about that. Yeah. We won't call them out, but... Huh?
Yeah, but imposter syndrome is real, and it happens at all levels. Yes. I actually have a mentorship circle of women, and one of the women's actually told me, she's like, men don't have imposter syndrome. And I was like, holy shit, do they really believe this? Everybody does, right? So it's imposter syndrome. The importance of strategic networking, right? Finding a coach, mentor, and sponsor, like all these different things that I always end up finding myself answering these questions, I decided to put them all in a book.
That's right. Yes.
And so to me, this is like the gift to those early career folks is, look, these are the things that all of us as immigrants have run into in whatever form factor, whether you're in tech and legal, it doesn't really matter. All of these things apply to all of us.
I love it.
And at the end of the book, what I did is I took this concept of the immigrant success life cycle. And what I realized is that immigrant families all pass through very similar phases. You have Gen Zero who shows up, and it's like the survivalistic generation. They're here bare minimum to basically be the foundation on which their kids grow on. Mm-hmm. They're not aspiring to do anything great. They're just here to be able to support the kids doing some cool shit, right?
Yeah.
Then Gen One is where I'm first example. The second generation is you're on top. You're now building on top of the shoulders of your parents, and you're supposed to go and elevate and do more. And so when I think about Latina emprendedoras, right? I take a look at how long it took for my family to go from not speaking English to the first kid that graduated college, right? How many generations does that take, right? How long did it take us to speak English? How did we start taking advantage of some of the commodities that U.S. have? And if it took my family 15 years, if there's anything I can do to help somebody to shrink that to 7,
that's right.
That's my purpose.
That's right.
I articulate that at the end of the book. And you know, there's a faith chapter in there because I think it's important to also say, look, I didn't do this by myself.
Right.
There's a part of that as well. But then what I also did is I don't want it to be a story about me because this isn't my story. So I bring up these topics, but then I also brought some dope-ass people in my network to come and share their stories.
Nice.
So tell me about your struggle with imposter syndrome. Tell me about what you do with Strategic Network. So I brought in some pretty cool people to also add a little bit of their story to that as well. So it's a combination of storytelling and also calling out some of the things that, you know, have helped us be successful. We do.
I see an interview, man. I see a book interview / podcast of this because you got to put that story out.
Yeah.
Some people are people that read. Some people are audible. They want to listen to it. And some people want a combination. And I think that's something that definitely is in the works. We're going to have to produce it here at the studio.
Let's make it happen.
We're working on one already. That's going to be our pilot. We're going to try this out and see how it works out.
Yeah, so we're going to soft launch the book on March 22nd. Nice. It'll be available on Amazon. We're also looking right now, hopefully, to do a pretty dope book launch party here in San Jose. And my goal for this book launch party is
we're
going to
do
be
it here.
Different.
Unless you're going to do the Mexican Heritage Plaza here, brother, we're going to do something, man.
Let's make it happen, man. So my goal of this book launch isn't just to talk about my book, but I want to bring all the walks of life that I'm surrounded with together.
Yes.
Because I feel very blessed to be connected with a really good group of dope-ass folks in tech, but then I'm also surrounded by people in San Jose State that are hoping to be there one day. I'm connected to the high schools. I want to bring all these people together because they deserve to be connected.
That's right.
And so the book is just an opportunity to bring everybody together on a common purpose, but I want this event to be a networking event, right? Yeah. I want people to be able to I'm just the common denominator between all these groups, right? Mauricio, you're going to be there, right?
We're
gonna
walk through,
and you're going to get an opportunity to meet people in my life that you may have never met before,
that's
but
right.
you guys are all united because of the same kind of thing. So that's the way I look at it, man. This book is not about me. It's not my life story, but it's something that I think we all share.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. The book is like the business card or the key that opens up the other doors of opportunity, right? One of the things about me is you can buy my book online. You can go to Amazon and buy it, but I give away my book. Yeah. I give away the knowledge. I want to give it away because at the end of the day, if you read it and you use it, good for you. If you don't, then hey, it just wasn't meant for you.
Yeah.
Or it's about timing, right? But yeah, that's well, congratulations. Good luck on that one. And you know that if you let's create some hype on it because you can get it as an Amazon top seller, bestseller if we hit that campaign right.
Yep.
I don't know what the criteria is, but I know that I'm planning for that right now as well because if we launch, I'm working now on the graphics and all that stuff. Once we launch, we have to have that plan because you get that little ribbon that says top seller.
Yep.
Woo! Game over.
Well, technically, I'm a best-selling author already, so I did contribute to a book called Fortaleza, which I haven't been promoting because I don't want to distract from my book, but Fortaleza's out on Amazon now.
Fortaleza's a tequila, bro. I never heard of it.
One of my favorites. But
I actually had it. That thing was pretty bomb.
I have 3 bottles signed by the guy that makes it. So.
All right.
But yeah, but that's the goal, right? My goal is to do this, to your point, to be a launch pad. I have no idea what's going to come out of this, right? To your point, it's not about the books. As a matter of fact, any of the books that I sell at the book launch, we're going to take the proceeds and donate to Yacanex Community to fund Latina Emprendedora next year.
There you go.
Right? So it's going to go right back into that pot to help.
Donate some books too, and whatever your proceeds you get to that, it'll go back to to your organization, man. Absolutely.
That's the goal, man. So like I said, who knows what will happen after this. I definitely need this monkey off my back already because it's been there for a while. I just need to
How long is it taking for this one to write this one?
I probably could have get it done in probably 6 months, and it's probably taking me 2 years.
Woo! Right? So by the way, it took me 2 years. It took me 2 years to write my first book.
Oh, you're never done. So the funny thing is when I started writing the book, I had to go back and edit it because when I started writing the book as a director.
Yeah.
And now as I'm finishing the book, I had to update it because now I'm a VP.
Yeah.
Right? So a lot of things have happened and you have to go back and keep contributing.
It took me 2 years and when I read what I had wrote in 2 years, I was like, fuck, I can't publish that shit. I'm like,
you can't read back.
Well, you can't unread what you already read. And if I put all that shit out there, I'm like, fuck. So for me, it was more therapeutic.
Yeah.
Right. It was my therapy. And then the book that I actually published was a pared down version, mm-hmm. which I left it for the imagination for the movie coming.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, man. Again, if you don't know who's going to play me in the movie, Gabriel Iglesias, I'll take it, man.
No, because you won't look like that much sooner.
The before.
No. Anyways, man, I want to be mindful here. And again, I want to thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart, man. I did not expect this to go. I never expected it to go. I'm just amazed. And I'm amazed at the experience of life of where the journey that you've been and where you're going. And it's not over, man.
No, we're just getting started, man. We're just getting started.
This is, even for me, I feel like I'm at a whole different level, a whole different frequency now. And I'm just going to do everything in my powers that I can with all the resources and tools that I've been given and blessed with and continue to put out the message out there, man. So anyway, my brother, I want to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you. We're going to have to celebrate with some tequila.
Yes, sir.
I'm looking forward to having a signed copy of your book.
Absolutely.
And whatever I can do to continue on to support your journey, your successes, all the things that you're involved in, I'm one phone call away.
Well, appreciate you, man. And thanks for having me on. And congrats on all this, man, because I see it's taken off. And I'm just glad to be a part of this, man. Thanks so much.
It takes a team and it takes great people to be on it. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Mauricio Mejia Live.